You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Hey, welcome back. Another hour of the Tara Show. Thank you for all that are interacting now on the text line. Always like to see that. Good morning, Lee Rogers.
Good morning, sir.
I'm looking through some of the text messages about AI. I think we need stronger laws, and I've said this before. When it comes to Europe, the one thing they got going for them is their laws are much more consumer protective oriented, which I think here in the United States, we need to catch up on that. And we went through a time where these tech companies were really the villains because we saw what they did during the election. They started to scale back, and I still can't trust them, don't trust them. And I think there needs to be stronger protections put in place, especially when they start using all this AI, because it's going to really put us in a tough spot. Do you fear AI in the future?
I'm very concerned. I don't fear it just yet, but it's the concern, obviously, that I have is the immediacy of social media and people looking at headlines and things that are generated by AI that are not true. And for instance, I was going through something that I saw on one of the social media sites. And they were doing things about small towns in South Carolina, and it mentioned this one town that I know very well. And all of the images and things that they showed and things they said about it, about 90% of it was false. The images were generated. Some of the things that they were highlighting for this particular town were not accurate, and none of the photos or images that it showed had anything to do with the town whatsoever.
Wow. Call them out. Right. And, you know, the thing is, it's they call that AI slop. And I forgot what the percentage was on YouTube, but a lot of slop is being pushed out there. Yeah. Do you think maybe that gives an opportunity for real people to disassociate themselves with the slop, maybe make them look better?
I think it has more to do with trying to get people to watch stuff and for them to get credit on however they rank these things to increase revenue. I think it's purely, monetary.
Right. So going back to something we mentioned before, legendary French actress, is it Brigitte Bardot?
Yes.
Dies at the age
yes.
of 91.
Mm-hmm.
I know the name. I don't know much about her. Was she a big, let's say, heartthrob back in the day?
She was a little bit even before my time. So that's
at 91. Yeah, she would be.
Yeah, I was at the time that she was a thing. I was not necessarily interested in women or things. I was too young to have any, have any influence on me whatsoever. So, but I do remember
that. Didn't have a poster.
No.
What was the one poster that every boy had? Was it?
It was probably Farrah Fawcett in my time.
Farrah Fawcett. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Farrah Fawcett poster. It seemed like that was the go-to when you talk about stereotypical posters in the boys' bedroom. That's kind of interesting. I went through the list of some of the celebrities that died over the past year. So many of them that I've forgotten. Some great musicians. I forgot about that Brian Wilson died this year.
Yep.
I forgot.
Yep.
And Ozzy's not even that long ago, but I forgot about Ozzy as part of it, too.
Ace Frehley with Kiss.
Ace Frehley with Kiss. I forgot you're a big Kiss fan, Lee Rogers.
Yeah, not a huge, but definitely. One of the bands that as a kid, we went to, when I was a teenager, we traveled all over the place. Watching them in the Carolinas. I don't know how many times I saw them. Several times here in Greenville.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you ever put the face paint on?
No. No.
It's not too late.
I was not that rabid. I do have an original Kiss t-shirt from like the mid-70s.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
How about New Year's Eve? We all put on the Kiss face paint and we'll just pick a different band member. And even though we're not on camera, we'll just have to trust everyone's doing it.
Okay.
something else. My kids got their first report card of the year. They end out the first half of the year and they get their report card.
Yeah.
Can I tell you something that was on that report card that kind of shocked me?
Okay.
So this is something that both my kids need to improve on. One is in fifth grade, one's in kindergarten.
Okay.
Both had good report cards.
Mm-hmm.
My son is a super smart kid, so he's got like unbelievable marks on his.
Excellent.
My daughter, kindergarten, first time ever taking any type of test. This is right. brand new to her. She right. still did very good. Mm-hmm. But there was one thing that both kids were told they need to improve on. It has to do in gym class. They told them they need help skipping.
Skipping.
Did you know that they grade you on skipping in school today?
No, I'd, that's not something that I would look at as one of the important physical parameters, no.
No. And, you skipping. Know, it's so funny. We saw that, and they're like, okay, what they do is, it's so weird the way that they grade these kids anymore. When I was growing up, it was A through F was the scale yeah. that they use.
Well, the only skipping Here's I what did they was do. Skipping class, so...
You know, maybe it change. Maybe this changes when you get older, but at least at the grade level they're at, they have, it's like approaching standard, at standard, above standard. You know, they have right. different names for it. It's not A through F. So when both of them were like, need help with this, like mm-hmm. below standard when it comes to skipping,
yeah.
I was like, this is such a weird thing that this is an actual line item
yeah, really.
On the report card. So we had our kids, okay, skip for us. Neither of them could skip. It was so true.
Well, you know, skip. I'm more interested in like push-ups, pull-ups, jumping jacks, those the typical physical activity things. That's more, mm-hmm. you know, running, jogging, you know,
yeah.
those
yeah.
are I don't
physical
know, skipping,
activity. Yeah.
I just, you know, that's up there with jump rope, you know. It's just.
You got to put incentives in there. My kids are lazy. So, earlier this year, we went to Disney. And keep in mind, if you put on like a Fitbit and as an adult, you're putting
yeah.
up 15,000 to 20,000 steps
yeah,
when you're
definitely.
Traveling through
yeah.
Disney. So, it's tough when you're five and your little legs can't
mm-hmm.
handle it.
Yeah.
So she gets lazy into the sense where sometimes we'll go to things and we'll have to just by default bring a stroller. If she gets tired,
right.
she needs to sit down.
Yeah.
That's fine. But she takes advantage of us because of that.
You think?
Takes advantage. And sometimes she overly sits when she doesn't need to until there's something entertaining and she hops up like it's a miracle.
There you go. Yeah.
As in, you know, like if you ever watched a professional soccer match and they're dying on the field and then the ref gives a yellow card to someone else, and all of a sudden they miraculously recover.
Oh, yeah.
And they're
absolutely.
Back up playing again.
Yeah.
That's my kids when it comes to walking. And one person messaged in, when my son was in school in the 90s, he failed skipping. I said, yeah, we don't teach our son to skip.
Yeah.
Wait, so this goes back to the 90s? Do you remember that ever being on one of your kids'
nope.
report cards, Lee?
Nope. Don't recall that, no. Must be something fairly new. But no.
Is it a hand-eye coordination thing? Is that why they think it's important?
That may be so. That just doesn't sound like one of the more important physical activities, though, to me. Just, yeah.
Okay. So you're going to dress up as who? Which KISS member? I'm just making sure I'm not using the same face paint on Wednesday.
If I were to do so, it would be Gene Simmons.
Gene Simmons. Okay.
Yes.
Can you do the tongue thing like he does?
No. No. I'm nowhere nearly as talented as Mr. Simmons in that regard.
Are you going to go see the show they're going to put on, the laser show, the VR, whatever, the virtual KISS concerts that they're going to start, I think, next year?
I haven't really heard much about that. That's a possibility. I did see one of their anniversary shows in Greenville a few years back. So
I missed out on KISS. That would have been a fun show, I bet, to go see them.
Now, that's the thing. That, you know, they put on an incredibly good show. I mean, yeah, if you were into bare bones rock and roll, you know, they put on a great show. I mean, they were
right.
doing pyro before pyro was cool.
Yeah, cool. All right. Let's we'll strategize off air and how we're going to get this face paint. Maybe you can give me some tips of where I can purchase it, because I know you probably have some on hand just for this occasion. But either way, fun working with you, Lee Rogers. Looking forward to working with you again tomorrow morning.
Thank you, sir.
All right, I'm Ryan Recker, and coming up a little bit later in the show, we have one more guest. Todd Sheets is going to join us. He does a newsletter called On Wealth in Progress, and he wrote an interesting article, and this is how the article starts. Remarkably, even in one of the most polarizing periods in recent history, there seems to be bipartisan consensus on at least one of Trump's policy initiatives. Everyone hates the new national security strategy. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Let's see why Todd Sheets believes that. Coming up a little bit later in the show. And one of the big meetings that happened yesterday was Zelensky in Mar-a-Lago. We'll get a recap of where we stand now between Russia and Ukraine right after the break. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Tara on WORD.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. You know, one of the perks about having four kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north. Mm-hmm. And this year, he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now, you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Got a couple of minutes here, and we're going to talk about national security strategy with our guest Todd Sheets coming up here in about 11 or 12 minutes from now. But I saw this headline over on the New York Post. President Trump suggesting yesterday he'd be willing to go to Ukraine to convince its parliament to concede land to Russia in a bid to end the war after meeting with Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky while declaring peace is closer than ever before. It's going to be a tough sell because a lot of them don't want to do it, obviously. As the United States, I think sometimes you have to give them a dose of reality. The dose of reality is, imagine trying to do this without the United States' help. Meaning, if you think you can get that land back and we fully withdraw all of our support, you're going to lose everything. So here's what you can do. You can compromise and realize that, yeah, you were given a bad hand and you got to make the best out of what you got today, or you can make it a whole lot worse. Gamble your chances and make it a whole lot worse. Go ahead, your pick. And I think they have to cut their losses at this point and realize this is the way to do it with the United States' help. And for any sort of chance of lasting peace, to stop this from happening again, this is the route it's going to take. So Donald Trump going over to Ukraine and trying to make that pitch, it's going to be a tough sell for some of them, but they're going to have to do it. Sometimes you have to take the medicine. So after yesterday, you have President meeting in Mar-a-Lago, spoke on the phone to Putin, and then trying to figure out how close these two sides are. And he says pretty close. So here's part of the speech afterwards, where I guess more press conference. And what I'm going to do is, on this clip I played, I had to edit it together. So there's a little bit from the start of the statement. I cut out a big part of the middle where he thanks all of these other nations leaders. And then I clip back in towards the end just for the sake of time. So wanted to be transparent there. Let's take a listen. Here we go.
We discussed a lot of things. As you know, I had an excellent phone call with President Putin that lasted for over 2 hours. We discussed a lot of points. And I do think we're getting a lot closer, maybe very close. And our meeting was excellent. We covered, somebody would say 95%. I don't know what percent, but we have made a lot of progress on ending that war, which is really certainly the most deadly war since World War II, probably the biggest war since World War II.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at how many Russian lives were lost and just how sloppy Russia was when they totally underestimated what they were trying to pull here. They thought it would be an easy thing like they did in years past with zero repercussions, by the way. This is different. You messing with Ukraine is different. Going back to after this and a little bit further down the press conference, here's President Trump again.
On this one, are doing, I don't think anybody could do it. We'll see if it gets done, but it's very close, certainly. Nobody would even have a chance of getting it to where it is right now. Nobody would have thought that was possible. So I just want to say we've done very well. We've had discussions on just about every subject, and that includes with President Putin before. And we went into great detail, and we likewise went into great detail today. And it was an honor to have you at Mar-a-Lago and have lunch. I hope you enjoyed the food. Your people enjoyed the food. I can tell you that. You big, strong people. Your general over there looks like central casting.
You got some big brick houses here with you. I can tell. These guys are eaters. Oh, boy. These guys can put down some food. Look at them go around. If the president could go around and pat some bellies, I'm sure he would have right there. Look at you putting down like this was an endless buffet. You know, I got to say, if I was at Mar-a-Lago and the food was great, I would also eat as much as I humanly could because, I mean, why not? What other chances are you going to have of doing that? So the president on Sunday suggested he'd be willing to go to Ukraine to try to convince their parliament. A reporter asked at the post-summit press conference, part of which you just heard there, whether he would go to Ukraine to help end the war, replied, "I have no problem doing it. I don't anticipate it. I would like to get the deal done and not necessarily have to go," Trump said. But he said, quote, "I've offered to go and speak to their parliament," Trump said, specifically referring to the potential needed by Ukraine to concede some of the regions to Russia. Trump said the Ukraine, with 95% agreement between the U.S. and the in Ukraine and Russia, as they proposed a 20-point peace plan, but acknowledged that certain issues, such as control of Ukraine's contested regions, would be tough to resolve. I think when you point out what's your alternative here, you're not going to do this on your own. You know it's an opportunity for you to finally rest at night knowing that they're not going to keep bombing your cities. That peace of mind is worth conceding these certain areas. And if you go back to the start of all of this, it's strange. Some of these spots that were bordered between Russia and Ukraine, some of them actually preferred the Russian side of it, as in some of these different areas and the people that were living in there. If you were to poll them, they would have said, you know what, I wish we were part of Russia. I say this because ultimately, this may be what some people want in that portion. I know it's not great for the ones that don't want to be part of Russia. They don't want to have to get up and move and lose their home, lose everything that they've worked up. And that's unfortunate. It really is unfortunate. I'll tell you what's more unfortunate. You getting bombed into oblivion over and over and over again and no end to it. That's even worse of a scenario. We just got to be realistic here. Asked about this on ABC was Mike Turner. This is what he said about it.
You know, as Russia wants the Ukrainian concessions, it's going to be much more difficult because Ukraine wants, of course, assurances that Russia is not going to come back, that the West is going to give them the assurances that they will deter Russia in the future. And that's going to be difficult to give the type of assurances that the West is going to rise to the occasion to keep Russia from just reassembling and coming back stronger.
Yeah, and they've seen it before. I mean, in the past, there were certain assurances that if Ukraine gives up their nukes, this wouldn't happen. And guess what? It did. So one person texted in, you know, imagine if Ukraine still had their nukes, then this would have been a whole different story. Oh, boy, imagine if they did. So let's say Ukraine decided to threaten nuclear war with Russia. And let's say Russia decided they're going to go about this anyway, regardless if there were certain mega bombs looking right back at them. Imagine if we actually had a nuclear war in 2024 and beyond, that threat of it was actually there. How much worse the situation would have been. In a way, we should almost be thankful they didn't have it because Russia probably would have acted in the same way and it would almost certain have ushered in another nuclear war, which we don't want as a world. So I think we may have looked at another alternative that wouldn't have been preferable to the one that is laid out on the table right now. But I want to bring up Todd Sheets. He is the author of a newsletter called On Wealth and Progress. It's free. He has a book out called What Really Happened. You can find some things online about him. But I'm going to read the first part of a recent article. It says, remarkably, even one of the most polarizing periods in recent history that seems to be bipartisan consensus on at least one of Trump's policy initiatives, everyone hates the new national security strategy. I want to get his thoughts on that because, you know, we're starting to see some peace deals and things coming in. What about this national security strategy is objectionable? We'll talk to Todd Sheets about that after the break. I'm Ryan Ranker, filling in for Tara on WOR.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here for Mint Mobile. You know, one of the perks about having four kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north. Mm-hmm. And this year, he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now, you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 50% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your designer shoe warehouse store is on sale right now. Sneakers, boots, dress shoes. If they're on the clearance racks, they're 50% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop, assemble, and bake at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
RD.
Hi, I'm glad to be back with you.
So I wanted to read one of your more recent articles. This came out just a few days ago. The article is, finally, political consensus. Everyone hates the national security strategy. You start talking about most polarizing period in recent history. There seems to be bipartisan consensus on at least one of Trump's policy initiatives. Everyone hates the new national security strategy. So here we are, you know, the day after we're looking at Ukraine and Russia and perhaps close to getting that war wrapped up. And, you know, we're meddling in a lot of things that are going on overseas. Isn't it a good thing that President Trump is trying to tie up some of these loose ends?
Yeah, I absolutely think that this is a time when we needed a vision, a new vision, and a new direction for our national security strategy, which, as Trump has, kind of foreseen and then implemented for too long, has kind of been grounded in the post-World War II Cold War model that we pretty much left behind in the 1990s, from a structural standpoint, from the way that the world's working and from the things that are happening in America. But we never really moved on to a new vision of what our role in the world needs to be. And so we've seen these critics from both the left, like at the New York Times, and the right at the Wall Street Journal, who have kind of thrown their hands up at the idea that we're now going in a different direction. But I absolutely think they're right on the mark and taking us down the right path now.
Okay, so I think part of it is some of this is inherited, so you can't just ignore it. It's a reality of the world, of what's going on. But the idea is we got to get ourselves less involved in these conflicts, meaning we don't want to keep things perpetually funded by the United States. It's not serving our best interest or our national interest. And how do we get ourselves uninvolved in these situations and not involved in things in the future? That seems to be, for the most part, a strategy of Donald Trump.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the problem, the most tragic thing from my perspective with the Russia-Ukraine war is that we have Europe sitting here with what is really a relatively minor regional conflict at this stage. You know, Russia is nowhere near the powerhouse that it was when it was the Soviet Union during the Cold War. Today, its economic resources are similar to those of Italy or Canada. And they have attacked a much smaller adversary in Ukraine. And yet here we are almost 4 years later, and Russia still hasn't been able to conquer their target, which shows, you know, just how, I don't mean, it's not, obviously it's not minor to the Ukrainian people, but from a global perspective, certainly from the perspective of the U.S. interests, this is not a major world conflict. And yet we have a number of European countries, specifically Germany, France, and England, all of whom each have significantly greater economic resources to work with than does Russia, and yet none of them have been able to stand up and take the lead in resolving this conflict in the way, for example, that Israel did in the Middle East when they were attacked and they were threatened by Iran and their proxies before. So that is the great tragedy, is the mismanagement of the European defense system to the point where we have a regional conflict, and yet they are sitting back and almost helpless to do anything without the United States' involvement. And that was not always the case. If we go back to the First World War, even the Second World War, they were the first responders, and we came in later to assist them in bringing what had become, you know, a much larger and much more significant conflict to an end. So Europe has to take responsibility for their own affairs, and we need to stop trying to play the role of the world policeman where we're trying to be the first responder in every conflict around the globe. It doesn't make sense anymore, and we can't afford it anymore at this point either.
Yeah, I think Europe looks at us and they says, hey, we're the rich country. We should be bearing the brunt of the financial burden when really this is their neighbor that's suffering this. Do you think there could be some collateral damage? Let's say this war between Russia and Ukraine ends. We know Russia has given support to Iran. We know Iran is supporting terrorists. Terrorists are attacking Israel. Do you think there could be some collateral? Let's say this gets cleared up. That means Russia's going to have more resources to help by proxy these terrorist groups that are trying to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. Could that be another conflict we're setting up in the future?
It's certainly something to be aware of. And in fact, the new national security strategy, in spite of what critics have claimed, it actually takes those issues into account. And they make the statement very clearly that we cannot allow any one country to become a dominant player and control other regions of the world. And so, you know, they're very aware of the fact that we don't want to have, you know, Russia end this in a way that helps them catapult themselves into the next confrontation. And then they gradually start recreating, you know, dominance over Europe, kind of in the way that they threatened it back during the Cold War. So that very much needs to be considered as we resolve this. From what we're hearing out of the administration right now, where they're talking about potentially making some security guarantees to Ukraine, you know, I think that reflects this awareness that we want this to end and we want Russia to be contained so that we don't continue to see them expanding throughout Europe. And then it gets to the point where then we do have to be involved in it at that point.
So what do you think about bombing these drug boats and things? So when you talk about looking at some other conflicts, that's a direct threat to American people, this fentanyl and these nasty drugs that are destroying families and killing people, quite frankly, on some pretty large scales. So the idea is, you know what, we could try to seize, we could try to stop, we could try to arrest, we could try to prosecute, or we can just blow the stuff up so the shipment doesn't get here to begin with. What do you think of that approach? That seems a little bit more pragmatic if all you're doing is trying to save American lives.
Yeah, I think that this is actually, it makes sense on the level that you've just mentioned, which is, and that they both basically made their, you know, primary, you know, strategy statement for why they're doing this, which is to end the drug flow into America. That's very important. You know, I've seen numbers. We've lost more people to drug overdoses in the last 5 years than we lost in World War II, for example. So in terms of a good use for American military interests in protecting Americans from what's happening, this clearly makes sense. And then in addition to that, I think this is obviously a part of a much bigger strategy in South America, where we see Trump trying to work with these various South American countries that are trying to move away from the failure of socialism and communism and back towards a pro-democracy, pro-America, pro-capitalism kind of model that can hopefully help reinvigorate economic growth and well-being in these countries that have been so ravaged by the failure of socialism. And if that can happen, you know, we can totally change the dynamics of the Western Hemisphere here. And so, you know, instead of these countries, you know, with huge percentages of their population trying to escape and move away and immigrate legally or illegally to America. And I'm in favor of legal immigration when we have the jobs and the economy to absorb it, which we've had in the past. But if we can also create strong, dynamic economies where these countries can take care of their own people and provide upward mobility and opportunity, that's the best thing for those countries. It creates positive trading relationships for us. It helps deal with the illegal immigration issue. And it also helps us remove China and their efforts to try and reach in and, you know, get control or get a hold and create a power base, you know, within our own hemisphere here. So I think on many different levels, this is an important initiative from the administration.
Okay. Your Substack people can find on Wealth in Progress, Todd Sheets. Is that the best way to just do a quick search for your Substack to see some of your recent articles?
Yeah, they go to Substack and search my name, as you just said, or on Wealth in Progress. They can find them. They're there for free. I also do a very short weekly podcast, which is on YouTube and other services like Spotify, which is basically an audio version of the Substack report.
Oh, neat. In your book, 2008, What Really Happened, I remember our conversation on that. This would have been maybe over the summer, but I really enjoy your work. Todd Sheets, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and Happy New Year to you.
Same to you. Thanks for having me back.
All right, we have one more segment to figure things out for the day, and I'm with you this week, filling in for Tara. Find me online at Ryan Recker. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to WORD. Got a couple more minutes here. Thank you for spending it with us. All right, let's take a look at some of the text messages. Oil tankers seized by Trump were bound for China. Okay, thank you for that message. National security strategy must be America first. Thank you for that one. One person said enough with Ukraine. Another person said we should be deporting 5,000 illegals a day. We're nowhere close to that. Well, I think the self-deportation has been pretty effective, but also stopping the flow of coming in through the border. And ICE agents are out there actively working. I mean, it's been, I would say, lightning fast compared to previous years and previous administrations when ones were more welcomed into the country. I mean, Joe Biden, look at just the massive inflow up until his last year in office where he decided, oh, you know, this don't look good for me and my chances for re-election, so I better pretend that I care about illegal immigration. A couple of other things I wanted to get to, and, you know, this is something that I'm really focused on right now is the tariff debate that was in front of the United States Supreme Court, and those oral arguments were heard, I believe, in early November. So it's been not quite 2 months since that's happened. And it could take some time before an actual decision plays out. But yeah, 6 months ago, the Supreme Court heard those oral arguments. Now, what happens when the Supreme Court decides one way or the other? There's a few things that can happen. One, they could say, well, Donald Trump has the authority as president of the United States to impose tariffs. There could be that side of it. The other side could be, no, he doesn't have the authority. So what happens to the money that was collected? One, it could be moving forward from here on out. He can't collect it unless Congress goes and specifically authorizes these tariffs. Or they can say the money that was collected will have to be refunded because it was collected in a way that wasn't allowed to begin with. That could be devastating in so many different ways if that's the case. So they were talking about this on CBS, and Jan Crawford was asked, what do you think is going to happen with all of this? Let's take a listen to her answer.
I mean, I think that anyone that comes out and like confidently predicts how the court's going to rule in this case is just wishful thinking. I mean, it could be very close. I could see a 5-4 ruling, Trump losing. I could see a 6-3 decision. Perhaps Trump wins.
Yeah. And part of it is what is going to happen if he loses. And if he wins, I mean, to give the authority, nothing happens. But if he loses, then that's a big one. I think one of the questions that were brought up by the Supreme Court members, the one that is like, oh, boy, well, this could backfire on Republicans. Say someone in the future, a president, says, you know what else is a national emergency? Our climate. So we're just going to tear off any gasoline engine, or we're going to tear off anything that is against our environment, and can a president then authorize that without Congress stepping in? That is a great question. And I mean, what other questions come up in the future because of that? And oh boy, all right, maybe the Supreme Court rules that we have to settle this, figure it out, and then that would be the answer to all of it. I guess we'll have to find out. Going back to artificial intelligence, and there was one clip that was also on CBS this weekend. They showed a clip of a politician used in an AI deepfake, meaning it was more of a super PAC that was putting together a video of a specific politician, and they were putting words into his mouth as if appearing he was presenting this information. And is that allowed? I mean, that seems pretty lousy. Here's what CBS's take.
It does show in the very bottom of the screen a very, very small disclaimer that says this was AI generated. But first of all, you need to put your glasses on to see it.
Yeah.
Is it up to voters to discern what's real or not? Is there any regulation in this space to keep the public from being misled, perhaps in a more nefarious way than this?
So last Congress, there was an effort to introduce legislation, or at least pass legislation, that would put some guardrails around the use of AI in political ads. The federal government, whether it's the FEC or the Federal Election Commission or others, have stepped back. They're not leaning in to set some guardrails or just the lowest possible barriers to entry for using these sorts of ads. And I think the real concern here is that it's not any individual ad necessarily that's going to cause harm or great risk. It's the cumulative effect.
Mm-hmm.
In the erosion of trust in the process. And look, that ad is significantly different than the ad this summer where the president posted flying over New York City and dumping things on Mandami or others.
Mm-hmm.
That is satire. That is parody. This is much lower, much more insidious, right? It is eroding the trust that the viewer has in what ads are. And yeah, right now, it's up to you. It's up to the viewers to decide what is real, what is not.
It's up to you to decide what is real and what is not, which could be a scary thing because ultimately you could be easily deceived into the wrong impression. But what have we seen perhaps about Donald Trump over the past, oh, I don't know, his whole time as a political candidate or anyone in the political life? They lie about everything about him over and over and over again. They misrepresent, they put the wrong type of meaning or intention about him and flat out lie and then never correct the record after the fact. AI or not, they've been using this tactic over and over again. It's kind of a way to fortune tell of what's going to happen next. Imagine the amount of hate and heat they put on Donald Trump to every political candidate from here on out, setting the standard that way. I'll be back again tomorrow. Find me online at Ryan Recker or Ryan Recker Radio. Have a great day. We'll see you soon.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.